unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. It's the Top Chef Judges Roundtable podcast here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. Hey, y'all. Again, keeping with that cowboy theme, Mike Bloom here to talk about the penultimate episode of Top Chef Colorado. We've got a really exciting panel to join us to talk about the final three as it winnows down to two. First, someone who has been serving fish realness for years at this point and not just catching them out of a river, Haley Strong. Haley, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Luckily, I don't live in a lake at the bottom of a bear mountain, so I'm doing pretty good.
I don't know. Sometimes your internet reception is akin to that. And I am so excited to be joined by these two. A more formidable pair than Carrie and a cowboy cauldron. Josh Wigler and Emily Fox, welcome to the roundtable this season. How are you guys doing?
Oh, my God.
Hello.
Hello. I thought you were going to say Carrie and a toast. That's we go together like Carrie and toast.
Josh, I missed you because I know when we brought up the toast challenge, you just muttered toast for some reason for 5 minutes on the podcast. And I felt like nobody understood when I made that reference. So you have been very sorely missed this season. But that was really the key moment for me.
Toast, toast, toast. Mission Impossible style. Yeah. Well, we're back. We're here. And we're excited to be here. I do have to warn you guys that I may have eaten some raw trout before we got on.
You're not supposed to say that.
Yeah. So if I have to like go at any point,
we don't want to know about your gastric distress.
Yeah. I'll just let you know.
Yeah. The raw trout gives you a nasty case of the brown trout. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Michael,
oh my God. The bullet point of your notes. You're like, man, I really got to bring this in.
Oh, note to self.
Before we get really caught up in this, Haley Strong, first time you and I have ever been on a podcast together. This is crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy. We've met a few times in a few different countries, mm-hmm. and yet this is the first time we've ever podcasted together.
And this is spectacular.
And we've been around the network here, you and I, for about the same amount of time. You know,
yep.
My podcasting experience is coming up on 4 years.
Wow.
Should we get you something?
Yes, therapy, please. I need it.
Yeah, you know, it should be noted that RHAP doesn't have great health insurance. Like, there really should
Luckily,
be
I'm Canadian.
Like a Rob supported therapy.
Why isn't
system.
There a therapist podcast for each one of you on the network?
Because it's, you know, private thoughts and
also, but also there that. Is. It's called the Taryn Show. And Josh and I have both been on it.
That's true.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well, Haley, it's way too late. This has been way too late, but I'm so happy that we're finally getting on the mic together, and hopefully it won't be too long before our next one.
Exactly. And because the thing is, I was on the Top Chef podcast a couple times, but it was just to fill in for you.
Yeah, it's so
You're like
strange.
Ships in the
just
night.
Ships in the night. Ships in the night.
And I don't think you watch The Bachelor.
No, I don't. I probably should because, like, everybody in my life does, and it just...
You're
I don't
fine.
Know.
You don't need it. You don't need it.
My life's okay.
Yeah.
As I, like, slowly dipped my toe into Big Brother this past month to, like...
And then you pulled that foot right out of the pool afterwards.
Yeah, but I'm supporting Kirsten, so I'm gonna... I'll see what BB Canada is all about.
All right, well, let's get into Top Chefs as these two ships are now, I guess, sailing together into that good
or
night.
Or into each other. Depends.
Yeah, hopefully
Might
not.
Might be a shipwreck.
Wow.
I think we'll be okay. I think we're going to be all right here.
Before we get there, I would love to hear from both of you. First, Emily, I believe this is your second time in total on the Top Chef podcast, but you
Correct.
Are definitely the most knowledgeable about this subject between any of us that are on this, considering what you're currently studying. How long have you been watching the show, and what sort of interests you about the show?
I've been watching this show since it first debuted on Bravo in 2006, I want to say.
Oh yeah. Gosh,
maybe. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I first started watching it in college with my college roommate, and we got really, really into it.
I thought you were going to say we got really, really high.
No, that was your college
experience.
For the season.
Hey, oh God, airing my dirty laundry. Oh no.
No, but I always really loved the competitive streak of it. I loved the food concept. I thought it has, you know, it has a great mix of characters, but it also, you're learning a lot about food and the restaurant business and how people prepare things. And it's just a great competition. I really enjoy all of the people that are involved. And I think that the people who are the cast, you know, and the general hosts of it are also really, really awesome. So it's just a win-win for me.
Well, let's talk a bit about this season in particular. You know, we're now in our 13th episode. Josh, you've been with the podcast for the past few seasons. How are you enjoying this season? How is it compared to the past few that we've talked about here on Reality TV Wrap Ups?
I like this season. I mean, it's kind of gone to a less exciting place towards the finish, I think. But like some of the things that we used to talk about on the podcast when I was on here regularly, like, you know, having the finales like take place within the same location as the season is set, like that has come to fruition here. Like, I really do love the Colorado-ness of this season has been spectacular. Like, it's not like, you know, Top Chef California that ends in Las Vegas, you know, like it's not weird in that way. It's very much a celebration of the place that it's set. So that's something that I think that the show has done really, really well. There have been some incredible chef testants this season that I have really enjoyed. You know, Fatima might be my favorite of the top chefs.
I feel like you guys need to go hang out together.
She seems really cool.
You love her so much.
She's nearby. Go to Stura Smorgasburg. She might be cooking there.
I know. He's always talking about her.
Yeah. No, she's great. And, you know, certainly I've been, you know, following her adventure that she has been, you know, posting about on social media and hoping that everything's going okay with her. But I was rooting for her very, very hard. And so I took her elimination very poorly.
I think we all did around here.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough. But no, I've enjoyed the season. I think that there have been a lot of really great, a lot of great players. I think this finale, probably like the thing that, that like it, once again, to like pull back Top Chef California, like it doesn't it kind of like feel like we're sort of there where it's sort of like the, you know, cool dad versus Amar sort of situation where it's like two people that you're going into the finale with. Of the people who were in the final four, you would probably traditionally have thought that like the people who were cut in fourth and third place would have been the ones in the finale. So it's sort of like the Marjorie Isaac situation again. So it's a little bit strange, but I've enjoyed the season overall. I think it's been a really good season.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I made that comparison a couple of weeks ago as well, even when we were starting to get down there, that it sort of does have this weird thing where it's a really likable group of chef testants, and no shade to Joe Flam and Adrian whatsoever. But I think it's safe to say, if you take a look at that final five, I think the two people you would probably put at the bottom to make the finale would be Joe and Adrian. And I think it speaks more so to this idea that we talked about this a few weeks ago as well, that this seems to be a season where there are a lot of mistakes being made. And again, no shades to the chef, but it prompts, you know, when Tom had that sort of coaching session with them saying like, listen, you guys aren't putting out the food that we want you to. And they put out a bunch of good food, you know, subsequently. But I think it's just an example of how, to quote a season that Josh has been obsessed with for the past several weeks, one bad decision can kind of haunt you forever here. Where you have,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know you've purged that from your memory at this point, or your dreams. Yeah. But it seems like between like
I failed my quick fire challenge.
Exactly. Boy, it was not, not such a quick fire for Josh if you listen to the first one out.
Slow fire. More
it was
like
a slow burn of your like soul.
More like a no fire challenge.
But I think it's interesting if you look at people like Chris and Carrie, and we're going to talk a lot about Joe Stash here, like going into those episodes, I think they are probably favorites to win, but they make these mistakes. Whereas Joe Flam and Adrian have a little bit less of a track record, but they're coasting more consistently. They're putting out enough consistent food that when others make mistakes, even though they've done better than them in other challenges, it causes them to be eliminated. And this is sort of one of those weird sort of kill your darlings points of Top Chef, where I think even Joe Stash says it in this episode, that it's not a cumulative type of show. And it's unfortunate because when you look at someone like him who has won four elimination challenges up to this point and one bad dish sends him home, that's sort of the breaks. But like you say, Josh, because these contestants happen to have made these mistakes and they were front runners up to this point, I feel like, and Haley, I'd love to hear your reaction to this final two as well at the top. It feels like a very interesting pairing that I don't think any of us would have suspected from the beginning.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I will say it does feel almost a little unsatisfying. And I feel bad saying that. I don't want to diminish Adrian or Joe's talents, what they've been able to accomplish during the season. But straight up, Joe went out. Like, he got eliminated. And I get that's part of the game. Last Chance Kitchen is, you know, an aspect of Top Chef.
Don't say those words around Josh on the podcast.
Sorry, Josh.
Yeah, you know yeah. You're speaking my language. Strong.
And Adrian, like, I really like Adrian, and I've loved seeing her grow throughout this show. But she's only won once. Like, obviously, that's not taking quickfire wins into consideration. But she hasn't. She's been consistently like in the low areas of the challenges. So I'm interested to see where this ends up and how it ends up. But like you said, Mike, if you would have bet who ended up in the finale, these two would not be the two you would expect.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see how we get to that point. Let's dive into this episode a bit. A Little Place Called Aspen, which, as a Dumb and Dumber fan, I love that title so much. That was so good. I'm sad they didn't have to find a briefcase. I feel like Top Chef of yore would do like those types of challenges, like you have to find a briefcase and deliver it to this place in order to cook.
Samsonite. I was way off.
Is this a bad time to say I've never seen that movie?
No,
see you later.
You gotta correct that. It'll be a great decision in your life. Even if you don't like it, it'll just be like a great historical document that you're opening up.
Yeah, I've seen like 10 movies, and 8 of those are Harry Potter movies.
And it'll segue perfectly into the fantastic prequel, Dumb and Dumber-er, When Harry Met Lloyd.
Oh, what a great film.
Oh, classic. Boy.
I have to admit, I never saw that.
Yeah, it's a bad movie.
So. If you love right. 5 minutes of Bob Saget yelling scatological jokes at you, you're going to love Dumb and Dumber-er When Harry Met Lloyd.
Oh, that just sounds like a nightmare.
Just a bit. Well, let's get this Top Chef episode was a dream. So it's quite the opposite to Dumb and Dumber-er, though. Again, that's not saying that much. I will say this edit for me, this episode, it really tricked me into thinking that Joe Flam was going home. I feel like we found out so much about him, especially this first thing where, you know, they get to Aspen, they get a beautiful view once Adrian ends up standing up on a chair and getting to actually
see
the view.
I loved that.
Oh, that was so funny. And it's
really funny. It's like, here, we got to basically hoist you up so you can appreciate this.
And it's also really nice. And like, you could tell how close they are and how close this cast has become. You know, outside of like the Tanya and Claudette stuff, I feel like this group of people genuinely likes each other. And you could feel how chummy everyone is. But then we get Joe Flam calling his wife Hillary, or he calls her his old roommate. And we get a little bit of a
your BFF, Mike.
Yes. What?
Wait, didn't you meet her? Who did you meet? Oh, Tyler. Tyler's fiance. Sorry.
Yes, I sat next to Tyler's fiance. Ugh. And we wined and dined. That was
wrong,
a hoot.
Wrong bear.
They're all bears. They're all the same.
Yeah. What, Josh. Emily and Josh, what have you guys thought about this whole bear sort of running idea over the course of the show? Because I feel like it's been a bit polarizing. Maybe it's because of the personalities. Maybe it's the clique dynamic. I don't know. Have you fallen into one of the camps?
I mean,
naturally, there's always going to be cliques in these kinds of scenarios, right? I think they've been pretty funny for the most part. I also like feel like when they're bunking together, you probably never wanted to go into that room because it probably smelled bad. I don't know. That's just my hot take. But
stinks like Flam in here.
But I think that they've, you know, they've definitely had great personalities and they've been fun to watch. And to see it whittled down to what it is now is something to behold. But I've enjoyed it. I think it's been great camaraderie for the most part.
I just never really understood it, I guess. Like, I just like...
What, male friendship?
I've never understood male friendship. It's something that I remain...
Josh just hangs out with chicks all the time.
Yeah, I'm just... I don't hang out with anybody. It's really,
that's
it's
more
just
true.
Like friendship is really more of like the that's like the holy grail that I keep striving towards.
Someday,
sorry, Josh,
friend.
I didn't mean to dunk on you, LeBron
no,
style.
You're
pass you
right
through
to
Kyrie's
it.
Legs and you know over top.
Your first right podcast to together, and you yell at him and say he has no friends. I think this is going to be a beautiful relationship.
She's right, and I need to get my truth out
and
there.
And
so.
This is why I love Haley so much.
This underreported story on the record is that Emily Fox and Haley Strong, you guys have a secret friendship.
Yes.
So like, maybe I don't joke about it here, but I joke about it on my podcast a lot that I'm going to steal Mike's wife, Angela, and marry her. The same is true for Josh's wife, Emily. I'm going to marry both of them. We're all going to be a trio of sister wives, and we're going to live our best lives.
You guys have to hide your wives because Haley's coming for
them.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Mm-hmm. You're going to have dual citizenship, Emily. That's going to be really cool.
Oh, yeah. I actually would love dual citizenship because, like, stuff's going to shit over here.
come on down.
We are in trouble here.
And Haley knows exactly where I live, so I can't even escape right now.
There you go.
Anyway, we digress. Back to bears.
We digress is going to be the subtitle for this podcast, to be quite honest. A little place called Aspen, and we digress. Yes. I want to get a bit. Let's get into the quick fire here, because I want to go to Haley Strong for Fashion Watch this week. We've got two major looks to talk about here. We've got Padma's Yippie-Ki-Yay look. We've got Chris Cousantino and his little poinsettia shirt. Haley, give me your gab. Give me your thoughts on these looks.
Okay, so first of all, I want to just tell you guys how I viewed this episode. So a big snowstorm came through Niagara Thursday night at about... it lasted from about 7 p.m. to about 7 a.m. I had a couple glasses of wine, as you do during RuPaul's Drag Race in preparation for Top Chef. I sat downstairs to watch Top Chef at 10 p.m. Eastern time in Canada. And about 5 minutes into the episode, the power went out. No big deal. The power went back on about a minute and a half later. But our satellite did not come back on. And because we live in the country, we don't have cable. So I had to wait for the satellite to come back on. So it came back at about 10:45. So I saw the first 5 minutes, the last 15 minutes, and then I had to go back and watch everything in between.
Oh my God. It's like Memento.
Yeah, it was. Don't worry, I've never seen that one either. So I'll just laugh past that reference.
Yeah. He experiences time in weird ways.
So Padma Fashion Watch, wow, was she absolutely on fire. Like you said, there's two major looks this week. We had Cowgirl Realness and then Trixie Mattel on her new album. One Stone Realness with the paisley getup. And actually, I was so taken by the gold eyeshadow that Padma was wearing for the elimination challenge that I tweeted at her saying, hey, what eyeshadow is that? Never expecting to get a response back. She quote tweets me and tells her it's part of her MAC makeup line that's coming out March 15th. So.
Oh. Wow.
Wow, that is like a serious celebrity moment.
Haley, can I also digress for just a second? What if we like got her makeup and then you did it for me? Because like you're such a makeup maven. You know exactly what you're doing. I have no idea how to do any makeup. I feel like we could do like a really fun makeover with Padma's line.
I would love to. She has some really, really fun stuff coming out. So, if you are a makeup lover and, you know, want some Padma makeup, that is coming out March 15th. So.
Okay,
worldwide,
cool.
I think.
Very good to know.
Yeah, so we will.
Will you guys podcast about it? Will you, like, live podcast?
Instagram live, because you want to see us.
Yeah, Instagram live. I was going to say, probably tougher to describe what you're putting on and how it looks.
Yeah.
It looks really good.
Very gold?
Oh, yeah, shiny.
Let me get the hex code for this color and bring it up so everyone can be on the same page about it. Yeah, I guess I realized, when I interviewed Padma a couple months back, I realized I probably should have had that makeup question in my back pocket, Haley. I didn't realize she had something to shill out.
Yeah, a little upset with you.
You'll get another shot, Mike. You can redeem yourself. Reverse the curse.
Finally, that's my one horn in my thiel. Thorn in my heel.
Oh, what has happened?
I don't know what that means, and I'm really upset by it.
We digress.
I had some raw trout too. Josh and I shared a platter. It's been a day. Let's get into this challenge here. We go to the T Lazy 7 Ranch, and we get a quick fire to in 45 minutes. Cook your best dish featuring trout, but there's a catch. Quite literally,
have
to catch the fish. Josh, what did you think about this challenge at the outset? Was this one of those? I know we've sort of griped in the past about some of the more gimmicky quick fire challenges. Is that does this sit in that camp for you, or are you fine with it?
It's just so crazy that like you had 45 minutes to do this whole thing, and you had to catch your own fish. That's so much to throw at these people at this stage of the game, too. And what was interesting to me is, like, this feels like the type of quickfire that you would see or would maybe be better used if there were a bunch of different people in the competition still. But when you're this close to the end of the line and you are
literally
forcing them to like cast lines out into the you know, to get this like river trout, it's just such a strange, I don't know, it just felt like a really strange final quickfire to me. I didn't love it.
I felt bad that they had to run so far from the actual pond, like into the woods. Like you couldn't have a station, I don't know, like 10 feet away where you're like, great, now I can start cooking. Like it
Joe
needed
Flam,
to be.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Like you really were like gunning for it and like a, you know, you had to run like 2K.
Can we imagine what if Leanne had to do this? What if she was still in the competition? Right. I mean,
I like to think about this whole season as, what would happen if Leanne had to do this? And it's a great thing she just left when she did, because oh my God, there's so many things where I'm just like, girl, like this would not have worked.
Yeah. Haley, what did you think about this challenge? And I guess the resulting action from it as well, because it did provide at least some comedy in watching these three chefs, professionally trained chefs, try their best and their damnedest to catch a fish.
Yeah, this challenge was definitely easy bait for comedy.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Slaying us in Brooklyn right now, Haley Strong. You are on fire. Yeah. We should have done this sooner.
It's unfortunate that none of these people were angels in the outfield. You guys aren't sports people, but that's a great joke because Mike Trout is the outfielder for the Anaheim Angels.
Sure.
I thought you were just mentioning movies at this point.
I was going to mention
that Joe Flam learned how to fish from watching a river runs through it, which I'm assuming you have never seen.
Of course not.
Or this was going to be like a series of like Joseph jokes of like Joseph Gordon-Levitt was in Angels in the Outfield. Like,
I was
like
in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat twice.
I was
when
too.
I was a kid.
Close my eyes. Yeah. Yeah. I was not in it. I didn't get a role in our elementary school version of.
You're just a big Andrew Lloyd Webber fan.
Oh, who is not? Love never dies, and neither does Haley's love for Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Wow.
I was just in the special chorus because I don't think I was a good actor. So they were like, you can sing well and carry all of the tunes.
Yeah, I was Joseph. Not a big deal.
Wow.
We're here with a star today.
It's really not that big of a deal.
Emily, did you get to sing through all the colors of the coat?
I literally sang every single song in that entire show.
They just like let you guys. Like-
yeah, we were on a special podium on the side. There were like nine of us.
Thing where like usually it's just like a single narrator, but some.
No. They had a whole bunch of narrators.
Yeah,
we were the supportive singers for the entire show.
Oh, weird.
I was out the entire time.
Oh, amazing. I mean, I think it's appropriate that we're talking so much about Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, considering the amount of Josephs in this episode of Top
that's
Chef.
True.
So we just need to like keep like, you know, tripling down on our Joe theme.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we got to throw down with our Joes. So let's go down. So they start catching it. It turns out that Adrian can cook a fish, has a little bit more trouble catching a fish. She brings in with, I think, 20 minutes left. So more than half the time has passed. I also want to note that Padma said if they're not able to catch a fish, they have a brilliant array of canned fish they get to use. And I feel like there was so much shade thrown towards canned fish that they actually blurred out the labels on it, because I think they knew that this company would not want to be slandered by everyone just being so disgusted at the idea of cooking with canned fish. But luckily, nobody has to do that. Everyone gets to use fresh fish. But maybe, I don't know, Haley, do you think that the way things came out with Adrian, she actually might have done better with cooked fish, considering what Chris Cosentino had to say to her?
Yeah, like, that was a really unfortunate situation for her.
Bad.
So Adrian didn't have a whole lot of time left, so she just went with the excuse that, well, fresh fish is better, mostly raw. Not the case for lake trout or river trout, because like Chris points out, bears live up in the mountains and their excrement runs down the mountain into said river, and the fish consume that, and therefore if you're eating raw fish you are consuming that. So no one would eat it. They would just eat the sauce, which surprisingly this sauce didn't have champagne in it. She does love a champagne based sauce.
She does.
Oh, but that's
pearls.
A good like inciting incident for later, because like that's what she does later on. Like, it's a good foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. What I'm surprised about is that, like, people, I guess maybe this is something I just expected from chefs generally, but don't you typically know what fish you can cook, like, slightly raw and which ones you can't?
This is a serious indictment of Adrian.
Yeah, I mean, do we anticipate this to be, like, as Jessica Lise would coin it, like, a five-hole challenge? Should we castigate Adrian more, Josh, because she cooks with fish so much and she brags about cooking with fish so much?
Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't even really thought about that. Yeah, I don't know. She was talking about how, like, I cook a lot of fish. I've never, you know, gotten, like, my own fish to cook it and everything like that. Maybe she should be a little bit penalized for it. It was just such a rough deal. The thing that I was really caught up with the most was, obviously, they're not going to eat the fish because it tastes like bear poop, potentially. But, like, the fact that they were, like, even eating all the other stuff on the plate, like the sauce and, like, the skin and stuff, like, I still just, like, kind of felt really icked out by it. I was like, you should not be eating anything on this plate if it's got potential bear poop particles. That just seems like a bad idea.
Stay away from that particulate.
Yeah, stay away from the particulate.
I think you're just giving them ideas for quick fires for next season. I don't know. I don't know what the wood situation is like in Kentucky, but who knows? We've had Rocky Mountain oysters. We can go to other parts of the body and things that might come out from them therein. I will say, talking about the other dishes, I was a little surprised that Joe Sasto did not win this one. I mean, I think Joe Flams looked, I mean, it looked fantastic. I really just liked the look of, like, the mushrooms on top of it, and just, it had a really nice presentation. But Joe Sasto doing this really interesting mix of the trout gelée with spring onion corn cakes and a berry glaze. It's one of those things where it sounds like such a disparate combination, but I think Chris said that it, like, plays on the take on the frontier. So I don't know, Emily, were you surprised that Joe Flam was the one who took this, considering Chris's comments towards all those dishes?
I was, because it just seemed kind of like, all right, well, sure. I mean, I was obviously gunning for Adrian. I think she's really my pick in the long run for, you know, a winner. I think Top Chef generally has a problem with women and not, you know, not really picking women when it comes to the final winner of each season. Mm. We tend to go for, like, the really safe white guy instead. So it'd be really, really nice.
You can
nice.
Say this because Kurt Quark's not on the podcast.
Absolutely.
So you,
he's,
you can say this safely right now.
Wherever he is right now, he is raising many silent protestations.
Yeah, he's like, what the fuck?
But yeah, I mean, I think that was sort of a surprise. I was expecting Sasto to kind of take it because he had the time to be able to execute it. Even though he wasn't the first one to catch the fish, he still had adequate time to kind of pull this off. And especially since he overcooked the fish in his eyes, but then was like, oh, good. Actually, I shouldn't have served it raw. So it's good that it happened that way. Yeah, I was sort of like, oh, all right, Flam, sure.
You know what I enjoyed was when Chris Cosentino announced the winner of the quick fire. Did you guys pay attention to how he announced Joe Flam's name?
Did he say Joe Flam's?
Yeah, he goes, the winner is Chef Flam's. And to me, obviously, now Joe Flam is Flam's. That's how this works in my mind.
Like perfect. Jim's.
Yes, yes.
Yes, friend of the podcast now, two-time guest, Jim's. And he sends his best regards, by the way, to his number
Jim's,
one
I
fan.
Love you. I love you, Jim's. I
mean,
love you,
that
Jim's.
Was honestly my mess up. Like, yeah. That happened with me.
I will be on a podcast with you at some point in the future, Jim's. It'll probably take us 4 years, the same amount of time it's taken me and Haley Strong to get on a podcast together.
I also love, I totally see where you're coming from, Emily, but I do like this idea that Joe Sasto almost accidentally backed his way into a win. Like, this whole idea of him being like, crap, I overcooked the fish. Oh, I am so screwed. And then when Chris Cosentino says, oh no, like, you almost want to overcook the fish. And Joe gives this sort of like Jim Halpert look into the camera of like, oh my God, did I just accidentally win this quick fire? But unfortunately, it was not to be. I do want to ask, what do you guys think about Joe Sasto's mustache? We have not had you on the podcast. I feel like both of you have opinions about Joe Sasto's specifically groomed mustache, considering that you do live in Brooklyn, which I feel like is populated by many men who have the same type of facial hair.
I mean, yeah, he would fit in perfectly here. That's no question. I kind of want to touch it. I don't think that that's like, you know, it's not meant to be anything weird. I just like want to understand the construction of it and like how it curls the way it does. I mean, obviously he's using product, but like, I just want to like understand it better.
I want to know its name, you know, like
Miguel.
Miguel, the sastache.
And Emily, you should tweet to Joe Sasto what product he uses in his mustache, and he'll quote tweet you and say when his line of mustache products will be out on the market.
That's a really good idea. And then Haley, if you could just apply that to my mustache,
yeah, I could
that would
that.
Be great as part of our makeup, you know.
Maybe
time.
We can use it on my neared and like get like my nerdy mustache to like really.
It actually will curl if you let it grow. It takes about 6 months, yeah, but you can do it.
Yeah, it's gross. It's gross.
I can't wait for that personal grooming to take effect. We'll have Joe Stash. I don't know what we call like Josh Neard. Is that a perfect portmanteau?
Yeah, I think that's basically what it is.
I've never heard the term Neard before. And let me tell you, it's very unsettling.
It's very unsettling to have.
It's nearly a beard.
That's fair. I will give you that.
To be afflicted with the Neard is no good.
Which is more unsettling, hearing about Josh's Neard or having to eat a bunch of things that have touched a fish that might be swimming in bear poop?
Probably the Neard, yeah. Like, as long as it's cooked, like, The other stuff was cooked, right? Whatever. If I get a worm, worst case scenario, I lose 30 pounds.
That's true. I mean, that'll clear you right out.
Yeah, I could go for a nice cleanse. I'm not gonna
people
do it myself.
Pay a lot for those cleanses.
Exactly.
Is the Neard okay, Emily? Should I get rid of the Neard? What are we doing?
No, don't shave the Neard. I like the Neard.
Emily likes the Neard. Endorsement.
There we go.
I've been with you for 12 years. I better like the Neard at this point.
Nice. I like this.
Yeah, the Neard's a part of him at this point. You get him, you get the Neard. It's a 2-for-1 deal. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, let's walk through the open field with the chef testants here as Padma takes us to our elimination challenge, cooking at the Food and Wine Classic. But there's, I would say, a twist. There's a couple of, I guess, complications thrown in. The first is that their dishes must be vegetarian. Second is that they all must be cooked on this cowboy cauldron, which I was personally sweating for a second. I know last season I was very vocal about how I did not like the penultimate episode when they had to cook the Mayan-style food on that open grill that ended up screwing over Sheldon. And I was hoping that we didn't have to do the, okay, you have to cook authentically like the cowboys, but that seemed to be the only sort of wrinkle in that. And they get a sous chef to do this as well. First off, Haley, what'd you think about this sort of wrinkle in here to cook vegetarian? Do you feel like it was, it took it enough off the beaten path to make it unique enough of a challenge?
Yeah, so I was kind of curious as to your opinion on the challenge as a whole, because I remember that you were not a big fan of this very specific thing that no one had ever done before, defining the fate of you, one of your faves. So I thought it was interesting that they were kind of doing that again this year. Like, you have to make a vegetarian dish on this weird fire thing. I liked it. I think I love seeing different variations on foods throughout the seasons, and I don't think they ever pay quite enough attention to vegetable-based dishes, and I like seeing that. It was funny, I saw on Twitter, because obviously I love Padma, I follow her, someone tweeted saying, hey, you know, it's not fair of you to say cook a dish without a protein, because, you know, lots of vegetables do have protein, or veggie dishes have protein. And Padma responded saying, like, yeah, you're right. In the chef world, they call meat protein. That's just kind of how it goes. So they weren't trying to diminish the fact that vegetable dishes have no protein. The thing is,
no, it's like their vernacular.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it's because the Food and Wine, you're just preparing like a little, like an amuse-bouche almost. I would have loved to see like a full dish using all vegetables.
Yeah, Emily, you're someone who obviously studies food. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, this idea of not a lot of veggie-based dishes on Top Chef. You just mentioned that you agree with it before. Do you feel like it's that's sort of Top Chef's thorn in their heel, to use a phrase I screwed up beforehand? Do you think it's something that they don't really embrace as a show?
I think it's a thorn in the heel of this culture. I think that we often think that we need to have a huge protein of some variety on every single dish of every single meal that we eat. And the reality of the situation is that we should be eating a lot more fruits and vegetables. So if I see a vegetable forward like challenge, all the more power to Top Chef for doing that. I would love to see them do that more. And I am somebody who loves a piece of meat. Like, I, you know, I,
yeah, exactly. I'm not a vegan. I'm not a vegetarian. I'm not close, but I would love to see more challenges using, you know, all vegan ingredients or all vegetable ingredients, not using gluten. Like, you know,
as someone who's allergic to eggs, I would love to see them not throw an egg on things, which actually they don't really do that often, which is great.
Exactly.
But like, but you know, I think that like vegetables are an incredibly versatile food that we don't really see highlighted the way that we should. And there are so many people that are incredibly talented at like sort of extracting beautiful flavors and dishes and creating really beautiful things without having to have, you know, the quote unquote protein on it. So, you know, to see it as like a small dish where it's like an amuse-bouche, like you said, I mean, sure, that's something you can make. And like, obviously executing like 200 something dishes for that, you know, for one service is really, really hard to do. But I would love to see a full scale meal like you were saying, Haley. I think that that's a great
idea. Five-course veggie meal, including dessert. And you have to make like zucchini bread or something.
Yeah.
I had a beet sorbet last night.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't go out to dinner with you. So like you really haven't divulged
this
information to me.
I was at this fancy restaurant in Brooklyn for my friend's birthday. There was like five of us. And we had like this big debate over whether or not we should even bother with dessert, which was obviously stupid because of course we should bother.
You also got like a really nice dessert port or something, right?
I did. I did.
Wow. I like met him at the bar after because it was our mutual friend's birthday and I had dinner at home. And he was like, I had a port tonight.
I had a port wine. And it was this beet sorbet that was like out of this world.
Yeah.
Good.
You don't even really like beets.
Yeah.
Too.
So, but I think that like speaks to what you're saying. It's like vegetables are so much more versatile than they're given credit for. Yeah. Like they're looked at as like the necessary evil. It's like, no, you can cook really imaginative, innovative stuff with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to see Top Chef just vegetables, kind of like Top Chef just desserts.
That's a great idea.
A spinoff.
I would watch it.
I don't know. Well, I feel like all the kid contingencies are going to tune out. It's going to be their least favorite show if it's called Just Vegetables. You lose out on a key demographic.
I think you're right that it would be really fun.
Top like, Chef legumes, show, and it's like all beans.
Yeah. It needs work in terms of branding, but I think as a concept, I think that's actually really great.
Top Chef Green.
I thought Top Chef Colorado was Top Chef Green.
If only. I did ask Carrie in my interview with her because it came out this past week. I was like, you prepped for so many challenges. What challenge did you expect to happen and wouldn't? And she said outright, like, I thought we were going to get a weed challenge. So she's speaking on behalf of the audience. I can only imagine what Carrie thought of in terms of how she would incorporate weed toast.
Weed toast.
I was just going to say that.
Would be incredible. I do wonder, in terms of going back to this vegetarian idea, you know, we bring in chefs from a variety of different backgrounds and cuisines. You know, Fatima's the most recent example. Do you think that they could bring in a chef who only cooks vegetarian food? Because there are, you know, vegetarian only restaurants. Do you think that there's like a place in Top Chef for someone that only cooks with veggies?
Yeah, but I think that the thing about that is going to be they are going to encounter certain challenges that require meat to be a part of it, and they're gonna have to do it. Like they never excuse somebody from a competition who has like
a shellfish allergy or something.
Right,
like that.
Exactly. Like what was that last season that somebody had to cook something with like shellfish that. And they had a shellfish allergy?
Yeah, and then there are people who don't drink, right? But they have, you know, like Chris this season with having to like taste beers and stuff, and he's like, all right, well, I have to figure out what I'm gonna do.
So I think it would be really cool. I think it'd be very cool to have like somebody who's like a
vegan chef or something.
Right, but they're going to have to cross that bridge.
It would be like a whole season of cauliflower, cauliflower, cauliflower.
Yeah, lots of cauliflower.
It's the new thing. It's the new thing.
Cauliflower pizza.
Well, wasn't it like a couple seasons ago where Zooey Deschanel came on and she was vegan?
No, it was Lea Michele. Or maybe Zooey
Deschanel.
Lea Michele was vegan and gluten-free.
Yeah, Lea Michele. That's right. And everyone was just like, oh, this is the worst.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's a real wrench to throw into things when you're not used to cooking, you know, that sort of small framework of ingredients. But like, I would love to see a refocus on that and to like see a broader message of like, okay, well, it doesn't always have to be, you know, like I was saying before, you know, meat, protein, I mean, protein, vegetable and starch or whatever, right? Like, I would love to see the portions change and the configuration of plates be more vegetables forward. I just think that that's a great idea.
Well, speaking of Chris, we get the return of our last three chefs eliminated in Chris, Carrie, and Bruce. And as the winner of the quickfire, Joe Flam gets to assign the sous chefs to each one. He picks Carrie. He assigns Bruce to Adrian and Chris to Joe. Josh, as someone who breaks down reality TV strategy on a daily basis, were you surprised by Joe's decisions here?
No, I think it makes sense. You know, we're really close. And he's been kind of clever in this regard before. Like, you know, he had the opportunity to rob people of their ingredients a few episodes ago when he returned to the competition. So I've been impressed with, like, Flam's strategic prowess. And it does, like, you know, it does all seem to be in the spirit of the competition and with, like, no hard feelings towards anybody at all. But there is, like, some level of gamesmanship that it behooves you to instill, especially if you can do it in a way where you don't come across looking like a jerk. And I think that he does it well here. He's, you know, he's already lost once. He was already gone from the competition for a while. He had to fight his ass all the way back into the competition. And he's not going to go out again when he's this close. So if he thinks that separating certain people is going to be to his benefit, it absolutely behooves him to do that. So I thought it was great. I thought it was a good strategic moment on Top Chef when that's not necessarily the thing that we are watching this show for. And by not necessarily the thing, I mean it's not the reason that we're watching Top Chef at all.
I'll admit, I was a little surprised that he didn't pick Bruce, just because you have the bear thing and you have the fact that he does go in a completely different direction than the pasta thing. But I feel like him and Bruce, like, have a similar type of aesthetic. I mean, the Carrie pick pays off extremely well for him, not just because she's a great person to work with, but because she's the only one that knows how to use a cowboy cauldron. So that pays off extremely well. And it seems right. Like Adrienne might have had her hands full a bit with Bruce Haley. We get this. I love the record winding down sound effect when Bruce is like, yeah, we can make some pasta. And then he just starts listing off types of pasta to make. So did you think that, you know, at this point, did you think that, is Adrienne going to get dragged down by Bruce's pasta affinities?
No, I didn't. But I did. I did find her conversation a little later pretty interesting, where she said, you know, often in the restaurant business, you see this older guy and you assume he's the executive chef, and I have to be forward and say, hey, I'm the exec chef. Like, these are my ideas. I'm Adrienne. Like, welcome to my station. And I did like hearing that conversation, because I feel like we don't hear it enough, honestly. And as somebody who's been working in a restaurant for a long time, and working in the hospitality and tourism industry, you know, since I was a teenager, you know, that is an issue that comes up in the hospitality industry a lot, is that it's very male dominated. We see that in every season of Top Chef, pretty much. We see it through the guest judges, you know, almost always male. It's very rare that we have a female guest judge. And we almost never hear it talked about. And we heard Tanya talk about it a little bit this season, about being not only a woman, but a woman of color. And that was a really interesting conversation that I enjoyed hearing. And I'm glad that Adrienne made it a point to talk about it in this episode too.
I think I hope that it's sort of a conversation starter, and it also opens Top Chef up to being more sort of aware of this as their programming and content kind of continues on. You know, like you just said, there aren't that many guest judges that are female, and that's a problem.
And there's been too many guest judges this season that we've had to cut out because of issues they've had with women. Like, honestly, like, there was two episodes where a whole swath of a guest judge had to be cut out.
Yeah, and I think that's and problematic, and especially with Tom as well speaking up against that. I do hope that they sort of embrace that as well. I mean, this is also the show that I'm glad that they've been having more female winners, but it's the show that took from seasons 4 through to 12, seasons passed before they got a second winner. So I'm glad that they're casting more talented, very exciting female chefs, and, you know, honoring them as well. And hopefully that translates to the guest judging as well. I do want to ask Josh and Emily a bit about your thoughts on Bruce. Because we talked about this a bit with Rourke a few weeks ago when Bruce went home, about how Bruce admitted this to me in his exit interview, that he's probably the most famous chef testant going into the show to ever participate on it. Do you guys feel
what a humble brag? Come on, man.
I mean, it's true, though, considering how much we got told that Bruce knows these people. They know Bruce. Judges knew Bruce. Do you feel like, and I know this is going back a bit, maybe digging up some old conversations, but do you feel like overall Bruce's notoriety affected the way that he was judged and placed in the game? I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
I don't know. I mean, I gotta say, like, he seems like a really good guy.
Yeah, and I loved learning about him having a brand new son.
Oh, yeah.
You know, watching that. Yeah, and congrats to him and his wife. I think that's fantastic.
But I will say, I was very happy when he lost. And the reason why is, like, because, like, that's he just, like, it felt to me like I was really worried that we were kind of just watching like a coronation season, where it was just going to be like a frog march to the end for Bruce, where he was just going to like stomp his way to the top. And it was just going to be like, you know, this person who is like predestined to win Top Chef. Cause that was like that there really was that sort of aura about him during his
time. And like an ego thing. Yeah.
You know, maybe, but
I think everyone has an ego.
If you're a reality contestant, I think like
I
that
guess
comes,
you're the pro, you know, you talk to enough of these people.
Definitely not. But yeah, I think that it was just it felt to me like it was just going to be like very obvious, and I think we can agree that like this outcome that we're in terms of the final two, like for most people, I think at least it's an unobvious final two. So like I'm into that, and I think that if Bruce had just like kept going, and I was really surprised too when Joe Flam walked through the door, because obviously I don't watch LCK, so I didn't know that that Bruce was out of it. But when Joe Flam walked through the door, I was so expecting it to be Bruce, and then it was just going to be Bruce comes back and barrels his way to the top. So just for like the you know sake of surprise storytelling, I was happy to see him go out where he did. He seems like a great guy and a great chef, and I would love to eat his food, but I'm happy that he lost Top Chef.
Mm-hmm. Emily, I thought that Joe Flam in particular was on fire with the jokes this episode, much like Haley in this podcast. this is the point where he talks about...
I'm a cowboy cauldron.
Yeah, exactly. This is the point where he talks about how, you know, John Elway is going to be at the festival. He used to throw footballs at the gondolas. I think he talks later on about how like, oh yeah, you know, the difference between a deer and an elk, that an elk is a deer at 5,000 feet. Like, I don't know. I talked about this before about how I felt that Joe was really funny in confessionals, but I don't know. Am I seeing something completely new from Joe? Are we seeing something completely new from Joe, or has he sort of been here this entire time of being like the deadpan joker of the cast?
Don't you remember a few weeks ago, Emily, like Emily and I, we were watching the show.
Okay.
And like Joe Flam hadn't been knocked out of the competition for the first time yet. And we were, I think it was like during Restaurant Wars when he was like the front of house.
And, oh,
like,
yeah. And he did a great job.
He did such a great job. And we were both like, it's kind of crazy that Joe Flam is still here. Like,
yeah.
It's like, he seems like that kind of person that gets cut like in like the first third of Top Chef. And he was still there. And we're just like, he seems like a really good guy.
He does. And then they showed a lot of like his like personal stuff to this week where his wife is like, you know, photos of his wife and she is beautiful. I was just
like a 10, like a solid.
Yeah.
10.
I was like, damn, you're a nice guy then. You know what I mean? Like whenever like you see like a guy like him with a gorgeous woman, that means he's a really nice guy.
I'm a really nice guy.
Wow.
And I will say as well, getting to meet him when I went to the Three Bears dinner at the James Beard house, that like he was...
Wait, you went to that? Oh my God. Can we just talk about that later?
Yes, we can definitely. We will digress about that later on because yes, I'm very,
yes,
very,
please.
Very, very lucky for that opportunity. But I feel like no shade to Tyler or Bruce, but I feel like Joe Flam had by far like the wittiest comebacks and one-liners. And it was just so damn deadpan that I have fallen in love with his sense of humor and have fallen in love with him as a consequence. But let's talk about the other Joe for a second, because I feel like Joe Sasto, who has been really blazing a trail for the past couple weeks, has sort of hit a bit of a mental roadblock. He goes out of the first day of prep saying, I don't really know what I want to make. It seems like it takes until he gets to the location to actually figure out what he wants to do. Haley, at that moment, were you starting to feel the sharks circle around Joe Stash a bit?
It's hard to say, because when I was watching this part, I knew he was leaving.
That's true.
Because
yes.
The way
the
I
Zemento,
watched,
yes.
Yeah, because of the way I watched the episode. It was, I feel almost like we've been watching Joe struggle the last couple of weeks. And yes, some of those struggles have ended up in wins. But I feel like he's been, I don't know if he's losing confidence in himself or getting frustrated that other people are winning in ways that he can't, or I'm not really sure, but it seems like Joe has been off the last couple episodes.
I've noticed definite smirks. I mean, obviously he's thrown shade at Toasts. But even with Adrian, this episode, you know, the camera pans back to him and he has a bit of a look to him where he's like, didn't get that one, did you? And I'm like, oh, I don't like that. And, you know, we've been all, you know, it's been very happy and sort of like, you know,
Joe
comfortable
Sasto.
With everything.
I know, like little Joe Sassy.
Yeah, sassy. So there's been a little bit of that, like a little bit of the Stash, you know, shade that he's
stash
throwing.
Sass.
Stash yeah. sass. Ooh, say yeah. that three times fast.
Oh, that is a tongue twister that any amount of sarsaparilla cannot untie. Yeah, and it's interesting, Haley, that you sort of watched it through the, like, memento or memento sort of way of viewing it, and that you really got to see
that
it.
That was beautiful.
Like, thank you.
So bad, Mike. That was awful. So good. Oh, you're a monster. You're a bad man.
I'm good for one. I'm good for one of those upon once in a while. But Michael, it's interesting because you got to sort of see from a results oriented perspective. You sort of got to see when it fell apart, because we can talk about it later on. I personally was a little surprised that Joe Sasta went home, just because we get this clip from Adrian being like, Joe doesn't feel good about his dish, but last time that happened, he won. And yeah, I agree with what you're saying partially about him struggling, but every time he struggled, it's corroborated in him doing well from a results perspective. So I didn't think it was going to be any sort of different here. But let's get into the challenge itself, because it's the next day. It's the Food and Wine Classic. We've got the Voltaggios are there. Brooke's there. Gregory's there. Everyone's there wandering around.
The love of my life, Sylvia.
Oh, yeah. I didn't notice Sylvia was there.
Yeah,
I didn't either.
Yep, she was there kicking it.
Wow, that's so much fun. I'm sad she got the May edit and didn't get the subtitle like Gregory did. All right, let's break down each of these three dishes here. So Joe's able to figure out his plan. He's going for a take on a beef carpaccio called a beet carpaccio, with beet yogurt, green bean tomato vinaigrette, and sourdough bread. He also goes for this interesting idea where he tries to utilize the cowboy cauldron as much as he can, though he is not a carry in that form of utilization. So he says, you know what? To get that smoky flavor, I'm going to stick a log in, you know, in my braising liquid, and I'm also going to, you know, put some beets directly on the flames. Emily, what did you think about this strategy, and did it affect the way that the dish was judged overall?
I mean, it was a really bold move, and I was like, whoa, you're like really putting a log directly in there. I personally probably wouldn't have done that myself, just because, you know, there's a lot of room for error with that,
like, but I also think,
yeah, and not like splinters. Obviously you're still going to be like pulling the beets out and peeling them, I think, right? Like, he still had a little bit of prep to do, yeah, after they were fully cooked, so like you're not exactly going to, like, you know, pull a beet out and put it directly onto the toast, but like it was a little jarring to see him physically do that. That being said, though, it seems like it at least like sort of paid off. I mean, ultimately we know what happened, but like I feel like most of the error was in how he treated his sourdough. So, you know.
Could have got some tips from Carrie.
Yeah,
how
exactly.
Pissed was he that he went out on toast?
I was just going to say, like, that's just, like, sweet, sweet revenge to, like, watch this man who's just been, like, dragging her about toast be like, all right, well, now you go out. Bye.
Yeah, what did you think, Haley, about Tom's comment about how it doesn't eat cohesively? Like, it feels like that was the main reason why he was eliminated. Tom alludes to it after the fact. Did you understand what he meant by that just by looking at the dish?
Not really, because it was very, he used beets in so many different ways. Let me see if I can read my writing here. We had the beet carpaccio and the beet yogurt sauce. I literally can't read that word. I just wrote green bean. That says green bean. Anyway, I didn't really understand why that was not cohesive, because there were so many beet things.
Should have made a beet sorbet.
You sound very distant, Josh. It sounds like you're echoing in his head now of like, I'm the spirit of the mountains of Colorado.
I'm it's now my official position to haunt people. I just yes. I've become a ghost, and that is what I do.
That sounds so annoying.
I know. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's bad for me too. I hate it. I wish I was corporeal again, but what are you gonna do?
Yeah, so let's move on here to Adrian's dish, a charred corn pudding wrapped in Swiss chard with shishito peppers and a champagne broth. Very ambitious, though Adrian has to sort of call an audible. You know, she was trying to tempura fry the peppers. She was trying to make some pearls. Her corn pudding was soft. We get a nice commercial break, and it turns out that she's fixed everything. Ghost Josh, in that moment, before the commercial break, though, did you feel like things were sort of the sharks were circling around Adrian at this point? Do you think that she was in danger of going based on how wrong everything was happening?
So maybe now is a decent time to let you know that this season has lacked a little bit of excitement for me because I've been pretty sure that Adrian is going to win the entire time.
So he called it episode one.
So
really, you know,
going back to like the conversations that we had earlier in this podcast about like Top Chef has a boring white dude winner problem. You know, this is a show that has had like a lot, like, you know, he's I'm sorry if he listens to this podcast. He is so boring that I can't even remember his name. Jeremy, right? It was Jeremy.
Frat Dad.
Yeah, like there's like and Nicholas and stuff. And like,
oh, Nina Compton was robbed.
Robbed Goddess.
I will always say that. So furious
and
over
this
that.
And the show has had.
I'm still mad about it.
It's infuriating. She's incredible.
And her restaurant in New Orleans is amazing.
Spectacular. So the show has had a real issue with this, and it's gotten to a point where it's like it's a fairly vocalized issue. Top Chef is aware of the issue. Like, there's no universe in which this hasn't reached their ears and really sunk in. And it's not like they can rig the competition or anything like that. But one of the things that strikes me is that it feels like this season, and I don't think that this is always the case. And Mike, since you're covering the show closely in terms of like the interviews and stuff now and talking to people involved with it, maybe you know, but it feels like this whole season was in the can when they started rolling it out on TV, which is not always the case. Like, it feels like there's still more to be shot as they're airing it. Like, there can often be like a long break between, you know, like the final stage of the competition, yeah, and then like the main competition. And this feels like, since it all took place in Colorado, you have in that very first trailer after the first episode, you have Padma's whole, "I hope you like nuts," you know, like you have that moment, which ended up being like really deep into the show. So with that being said, the first time you see Adrian in this season of Top Chef, she says it on camera. She says, "I want to be the first Black woman to win Top Chef." And to me, it would just have been so tone deaf for Top Chef to have put that on the show when it knows it has such a problem in this area, if that was not the way that it was going to go. So I know that she hasn't won a lot along the way, but to me, I've been watching Adrian's story this season of the show, just presuming that she is the winner. And I'm so convinced that she's the winner. And
that you'll just implode if she's not.
It's not that I'll implode, because I love Joe Flam. And so, like, you know, good for him if that's how it goes down. But I've just been watching the season as though that's going to happen. So at no point have I ever really been nervous for Adrian, to be honest.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think it's an interesting sort of, yeah. I mean, Antonio Mazzara, when he came on here, in a true Antonio fashion, planted his flag in a very similar way, going back to that episode one quote. I guess I had sort of pointed out, just because from a performance perspective, you know, she was really, she finished in the bottom for the elimination challenges, I'm counting like five times up before, you know, she finally started winning stuff or getting it in the top there. And I feel like I didn't want to, like, you know, coronate Adrian too much here, but it has been, and I actually was talking with Rourke about this a bit, after the episode aired, that it's been a while since we've had, like, you know, Adrian has won two challenges, and if she goes on to win, she will have tied both Kevin and Hosea as, you know, the top chef who has won the least amount of challenges before winning the entire thing, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. There's been a very high caliber of chefs this season, but I think one of the reasons why I had personally counted her out so early on, even with that quote added in, is just because there was so much good stuff coming from other chefs that it didn't really become imaginable to me. But now that we're left with those two options, I definitely see what you're talking about, Josh.
She's been stealth, you know, it's been very stealthy of her. And I think it's been fun to watch her sort of, you know, transform. And everyone loves a story of, like, sort of an underdog coming in and taking it all, right?
Yeah, totally. And to your point, Josh, you know, it does seem like because they didn't travel to another location, it wasn't LA to Vegas, as you mentioned before, they pretty much filmed everything in one sort of big sprint. And so everything has been in the can. So they could very much package it as an entire story from beginning to end. Whereas in other seasons, maybe they're less liable to do so because there's multiple outcomes.
Yeah, because, like, that's something that, you know, we've talked about this in the past. I remember, you know, like, this is not a show. One of the strengths of Top Chef is, like, it's not very useful to look at the edit, you know, like, it's because it just doesn't really tell you much in the way that, like, certain other reality shows, you can really study that. But in this case, it feels like the whole show was in the can. at the time that they aired that first episode. So it just like it pinged on my radar in a really big way. And so just like watching Adrian in that context of just like assuming that she's going to win, it has made a lot of sense to me, like her story in that regard. So I would be very, very surprised if she loses Top Chef.
Well, Haley, let's talk a bit about Adrian's dish itself. We get some comments from the judges that are a bit mixed, but she still ends up staying. What did you think of her dish overall?
This would be the dish I would least want to try. Straight up, I don't like Swiss chard. I find it too bitter.
Oh my god!
Big reaction in a great way.
I have a great story about Swiss chard. Yeah. I mean, so
I have never heard. I don't think anyone has ever seen that before in their lives.
No, I've grown up with a father who absolutely abhors Swiss chard. He was made to eat it as a child living in Maryland with a mother who was a very bad cook. She used to pressure cook all of her vegetables, and that was one of the crops you could grow in your backyard in Maryland in oppressive heat that could withstand that kind of temperature. And then she would just turn it to mush and serve it every night for dinner. So my father is personally offended if there is Swiss chard on any menu ever, to the point where like we will go to a really nice restaurant in New York when my parents are visiting. And if there's Swiss chard, he'll be like, excuse me one second. And like this poor unassuming waiter will be like, yes, sir. Like, can I help you? And he'll be like, why do you got this on the menu? This is terrible stuff. Can't stand it.
Can't stand
it. You know, and it's just like, I don't know. Like, you know, it's like going after like a cashier at Walmart and being like, why did you price it at this? Like, I don't control this, you know, like I have no power in this situation. But he takes it so personally whenever there is the concept of Swiss chard. So we are kindred spirits in that way.
Perfect.
As well, Haley.
I can't wait for our Swiss chardless house in the future.
I know. My dad will be visiting all the time.
I just like this idea of like maybe so you'll step one will be for your video will be put on the makeup. Step two will be, you know, work on the mustache. Step three will be throw any Swiss chard in the vicinity.
Yeah, just cleanse the place of any sort of like dark leafy green with like a red stem.
I can't wait to watch this show of the two of you guys and Angela as sister wives. What are you going to call it? Swiss Charmed?
Swiss charm.
Perfect. I'm buying the site for it right now. This we're gonna make this
TLC
a thing.
Will pick it up in a second.
I can't wait.
Only on Bravo. Watch what happens. I know I certainly want to.
Mike and I will be doing the recaps here on reality TV wrap-ups, and most of it will just be us crying because we've been divorced.
You should probably get my boyfriend Ethan on here on that podcast too, because I'm sure he'd have something to say about it.
Yeah, we're all just going to be drunk and upset. Yeah.
Welcome to the Swiss chard wrap-up. I miss my wife so much. Hashtag, please come back. That'll be it for this week.
Hashtag, you took my house.
Corn pudding sounds unsettling to me. It feels like a lot of weird textures, and especially she put coconut in it. Again, there's too many textures in there for me. Wrapped in Swiss chard. I already said I hate Swiss chard, but I do love champagne. would I ruin it with a sauce? I don't know. I would be upset that I would lose the alcohol content of said champagne through this sauce.
Seems like a waste of good champagne, right?
Exactly.
I do like how Tom sort of commends how it does represent a lot of different flavors. I think he describes, you know, there's sweet, acid, there's bold, and there's char. So you have to give her a lot of credit for doing that. I mean, I think they really commend her for just really taking a swing at things. And since she's really come into her own in terms of finding a style that she likes to cook, I think now she can cook more confidently and it allows her to take bigger swings like she did here. But let's move on to the winning dish. Let's talk about Joe Flam with his baby zucchini. Now, Tom Cern made this a little bit of a stink about the fact that, oh, you use baby zucchini instead of, you know, larger zucchini. Emily, is there a quibble, or are we splitting hairs between the size of zucchinis here, or is there really like a definitive difference between the two?
Is this in a zucchini comparing contest?
It kind of feels like a zucchini pairing contest. I don't know. Like, what do you prefer, a larger zucchini or a smaller zucchini?
It depends on how it's used, to be quite honest.
Yeah, if you know what you're doing with one, then, you know, does it really matter what the size is?
Oh my god.
Sorry, I digress. But no, I think The smaller zucchini, I understand it as like, especially for an amuse-bouche concept, it definitely works as a better vessel. That being said, I probably tend to agree that it probably has less flavor, although I tend to see that larger zucchinis can also be super watery, and that's a hard thing to work with also. You know, it tends to come to mush a little bit more, whereas the baby zucchini will hold its form a little bit better. So I understand why he chose the baby zucchini, but I could see it as also kind of working against him in that concept. I think that that's fair for Tom to point out.
And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when there was the altitude challenge where, like, when you describe something to Tom in the walkthrough, you better meet that. And I think we see a little bit here where Joe Flam tells Tom this story about how, I remember when my grandfather used to cook squash on the grill and we took it right off of there. And I think that's sort of what Tom was expecting. Haley, do you think that might have played in a bit as to why Tom had some comments about it?
I mean, Tom just has comments about everything. Like, can't he be satisfied about any of these dishes? No, I'm just kidding.
Stop it, Tom.
Tom, stop wow. doing your job. I feel like at this point, they just kind of have to come up with things to, like, say to add some suspense into the show.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So then, Josh, what did you think about Tom's overall comments to the three of them that, like, oh, there was a missed opportunity to go for more smoke. Do you feel like that was just sort of, as Haley said, just saying something for the sake of saying something? Or do you think that was a legitimate comment towards all three of them?
Yeah, no, I think we're in like the final stretch here and they need to dramatize it to some degree. I think it's really as simple as that.
But I also think that like that is part of the challenge is you're cooking on a cauldron. So you want that smoke component, you know? And that could be lost. I mean, that was also a critique with Adrian as well. They were like, oh, you charred this, you know, pepper to the extent that you did. You put all this work in, but it didn't really pan out in, you know, a way in which it resulted in, you know, that kind of like smoky, delicious flavor that you wanted. So.
Mm-hmm. Haley, how did you feel about Joe Flam winning this? Were you surprised to see that he was the winner of this challenge?
Wasn't that such a great moment, though?
Yeah.
It was, I felt him in that moment where he's like, that was mean, thank you, but that was yeah. horrific. How yes. dare you, Padma?
Yes.
So good. And I love how, I think this was on the AV Club recap about how Padma likes to say Joe Flam like one word. So now we can maybe make Joe Flam the thing. She's like, Joe Flam, you will be moving on to the finale. So luckily, since Joe Sasto is gone, she won't need to keep doing that. But if she does, we know that he's sort of a first name, last name type of guy.
Mm-hmm. I was surprised he won-ish, but I was also not surprised in the way that I feel like any of the three could have won and any of the three could have lost based on the comments we are hearing.
I'd agree with that. I was a little surprised at Joe just because I feel like they all got critiques, but I feel like Joe Flam got pretty big critiques in terms of like they said, oh, I wish the dish was more playful. Tom had that thing again about the zucchini size. I mean, he did make Danny Meyer love hazelnuts, if that's any sort of indication.
How are you in the restaurant business?
Yeah, I did love these random cuts between the chefs because they are chefs. So to see them sort of like ribbing each other about that was pretty funny. But we see Joe Sasto go home here. Emily, can you memorialize Joe Sasto for me? What have you thought about Joe Stash's journey over the course of Top Chef 15?
I think it's been really interesting to watch him grow. I think he's very talented. I loved the toolbox comment that got thrown at him a couple of episodes back. I think that was
emphasis on tool.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I first saw him as a chef testant, I was like, oh, really? We're going there with that stash? But like, I've learned to embrace it as I have with my neighbors in Brooklyn. You know what I mean? Like, I can handle it. I can deal with it. It's cool. You know, he's come and he's shown what he can do. And I think that that's very noble. I love, love, love his final words where he was like, just go for it. You know, mm-hmm. What's the worst thing that happens? You come in third or you go even further. Amazing. I think that that is such a unique perspective we don't often see. It's usually people being like, oh, I'm so mad if I just gotten this right or blah, blah, blah. I'm really disappointed in myself, blah, blah.
Yeah.
No, this was a really sort of more
healthy attitude.
Yeah, it was a healthy attitude, more mindful. And I felt pretty inspired by everything. I actually teared up a little bit at the end of this episode. I don't know if that's just because I'm really lame and emotional sometimes, but like I felt really good about where it sort of landed us and prepared us for next week.
Well, yeah, Joe has undergone an interesting journey as well. And it's interesting sort of pairing him and Carrie up in terms of these growth arcs, because I feel like they were in completely different places coming in. I do feel like I said in the very beginning of this podcast of this season that I felt like there really wasn't a villain. If there was, maybe it could be Joe Stach, because he kind of comes in with that like quasi douchey look and kind of that like smug persona. Not to say he wasn't doing douchey things on the show. I mean, there was all that shade towards Carrie about the toast, which I will again mention. Hysterical that he ends up going out on Toast after so much shade he's thrown towards her. But then there was like the, you know, guys in my place don't drink Radlers or they get punched in the balls. Definitely a bit of a frat bro mentality. But on the other hand, but I mean, he has the skills to back it up. But then he has this moment, like you mentioned before, Emily, where Keegan Gerhardt says like, hey, like you're writing checks that your ass can't cash, essentially.
Yeah.
And so his spirit is pretty broken at that point. He tries to rebuild himself. He falls a couple more times. Let's remember the streak of three challenges between Restaurant Wars and the Sudden Death Quickfire and the Tailgate Challenge, when arguably he could or maybe should have gone home in any one of those challenges. And he's able to build himself up, actually like realize what he wants to do, and really cook some fantastic food. I mean, he won four elimination challenges. People like Richard Blaze and Shirley and, you know, like Brian Voltaggio, all these great cheftessens have done the same thing. So even though he might have said or done things that definitely came off smarmy and not the best, he has a fantastic track record. And I agree, his growth was super interesting, considering that I thought that he was going to be someone who wouldn't really learn anything from Top Chef. But honestly, and Haley, I don't know if you agree or disagree, considering we've tracked Joe Stach together through these 13 episodes, he might be the person that's learned the most from being on Top Chef.
I would say forward he has, but I'd also say background Adrian has learned the most, if that makes any sense. Mm. Like, I feel like Joe has been really in our face about it, where Adrian's has been kind of like a slow, like, subtle growth.
She's like an orchid, you know, just like a slow growth and then beautiful flower.
Yeah.
At the end.
Ooh, I love that.
That was really good.
Thanks.
Emily, how did you know? I have some orchids on my desk right now.
Girl, I have so many orchids. I rescue them from all the trash rooms of every apartment I've lived in because people throw them away when they stop blooming. And they are not dead.
My mom has like 50, like not even kidding, all across the house.
Yeah, I have probably like 10 that I've mostly been, you know, pulled out of, you know,
trash
garbage. Yeah.
Our apartment is the orchid station. Hey, Lost. Ooh. I had to sneak Lost on it.
There we go.
God,
I
that's so embarrassing.
Got one in. No, definitely haven't seen that. Nope. Not
yeah.
Ooh, my heart.
One thing I would mention, though, about Joe that I really think sort of solidified my feelings on him was watching how vulnerable he was during the family challenge and him talking about his mother.
That was amazing.
I think that really gave us the background to understand where he's coming from. And I really appreciated him sharing his story and sort of opening up the way that he did. It's a very difficult subject, and I think that it was handled really, really well by him.
I think that's a great point, because I think that between that and there was also the Heritage Challenge when he brought up a bit as well. Like, I really like when reality TV shows why these people act the way that they do. You know, when we get to find out more and peek behind the curtain to realize like, okay, this person's acting this way because they had this happen, or they were sort of conditioned to behave this way. And I feel like we did get that with Joe, and to have that sort of more vulnerable side of him. And you know, when he feels like, especially that really emotional moment last episode when he's like, I you know, every time I cook this type of recipe, I think of my mother, and to have his dad there and get so emotional as well. It was absolutely incredible. So hats off, or stashes off, to Joe Stach as we look ahead. Stashes on in the case of Joe Stach. As we look ahead to our final two here, Joe Flam and Adrian, I'm going to make some assumptions that the Wiggler Foss contingency is going to slot in Adrian as the winner, just as a prediction.
Yeah, I don't think there's much to elaborate
totally
on.
Fair.
I think, I'll just be shocked if Joe Flam takes it.
Haley, what about you? What do you think?
I mean, as somebody who is always very, very biased, Adrian is on my fantasy team. It's hard for me to say, like, oh, I believe this person's going to win because of this, this, and that. Like, following my heart, like, I want Adrian to win, and that's all I can say.
Same. Mike, what about you?
I'll throw a vote Joe Flam's away. I feel kind of bad that we've counted him out.
No, it doesn't mean that he's not good. It's just a matter, I think.
It does mean that he's a really bad guy.
No.
It just means that girls rule and boys drool. Like, that's...
Totally.
I do. I have a very prominent spittoon.
I do drool.
Podcast, so catches a lot as I sit here hours on end talking into a microphone.
Disgusting.
You have a drool bowl?
Yeah, that's definitely one of like the grossest mental pictures that's ever been painted for me on a podcast, Mike.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I'll put in a vote for Joe as well, just because I feel like Joe can basically cook anything, which is so interesting. We've seen him start off with Italian stuff, but last Gen's Kitchen, he made a Korean taco bar. He cooked all this other stuff before. He won a couple of challenges. You know, he had this really interesting quote earlier on in the episode where he says Top Chef is an exercise in clarity, and how he sort of has his own epiphany about how he's finding simple, concise flavors. I will also say that we've talked about running themes of Top Chef, and I know I've been stumping for this idea that simplicity is the theme of, you know, Top Chef 15. I will also say that the theme of Top Chef 15 is cook your own food, because I do believe at some point in this episode, each of the final three have all said that, you know, I've never had my own restaurant before. I only cook other people's food. So I don't know if it was just a purposeful casting choice by Top Chef, or if just the people who made it to the end happened to be those that had not necessarily had experience creating their own dishes or creating their own menu. But again, talking towards growth arcs, I do feel like at least these final three, final four as well, have probably all grown significantly in essentially realizing why they cook what they cook. On that note, before we finish things off, Josh, I know you're always a big proponent or a big fan of at the end of the season, picking people that you would want to see come back for a prospective All-Star season. We won't have you on for the finale podcast, but we're very close. Can you come up with like a preliminary list of people from this season you would want to see come back for another shot at Top Chef?
I think maybe number one on the list, well, obviously number one on the list for me is Fatima, but beyond her, Carrie, it was so great, and her transformation over the course of the season was just so much fun to watch. I would really love to see her back. Somebody who I just really liked him so much, and he was a big favorite in our house, was Chris.
Oh my God.
Have you been to Butterbunk Kitchen yet?
Do you think I can eat his fried chicken? Does he make it with eggs?
We gotta find
Chris,
out.
Can you tell me? Because if you don't, I'm coming like next week. Like I will be there.
Yeah. It's apparently
stupid egg allergy
right
ruins
the
everything
from the F stop. So
yeah, no, we can literally get on the train and it's like a couple stops.
Yeah. But I like,
I
him
love
a lot.
Chris. I'm obsessed with him. I think he's fantastic.
Sasta will be back. You know, Sasta. Will
I really
be
liked
back.
Brother.
This was a great cast.
Yeah. I did not really have, you know, negative feelings about many people.
It was a very good cast.
Yeah, because I think everyone was very talented and very humble for the most part.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there was a really interesting group of people that came from a variety of different backgrounds. And I think they were all like very good camera presences as well. I feel like we sort of like weeded out those that like might not necessarily be the most electric chefs. I would even give a second chance to somebody like Laura, the Alaska chef, who sort of had that big meltdown.
Oh, right.
That was tough. That was really difficult.
But she also, the episode before in that cheese challenge, came up with that amazing thing of like using the cheese rind to make a cracker. So as long as like she doesn't deal with that pressure cooker, I mean, I know she had a lot of homesickness as well, but like she would be like you said, it's a really interesting cast. I should also mention for the fan favorite award, I believe the top two right now are Fatima and Chris. So, I mean, I think this podcast is generally stumping for Fati in that regard, but
yeah.
I guess we'll see next week as we crown Top Chef and the fan favorite. Josh, Emily, thank you guys so much for coming on and digressing with us. This was so much fun.
This was great.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
How can people find you guys on social media, and what have you guys been working on?
Go for it, Emily.
You can find me at Emlet. It's like an omelet that I can't eat, but spelled with an E.
You need to work on the branding of how you explain your Twitter handle. Like Ron Howard, but rounder is elegant. Like,
all
you
right.
Just need to like simplify.
Omelet, but no eggs. So it's Emlet. I don't
you
know.
You still got to just like,
I got to work
on
it.
We'll work on the messaging.
We got to pull off your intro line for Swiss Charmed, like they do with The Real Housewives. So we'll work a bit on your branding there.
All right, I have to think about that.
You do the spin, and they say you need to break an egg to make an omelet, but I can't have it anyway.
I like that. Or like I might be allergic to eggs, but I'm one that's tough to crack or something like that.
Oh, I like that. I don't know.
Who wants to hear a yolk?
Stop.
Sorry, guys.
I'm like,
sorry.
I have a dozen different ideas, and none of them include eggs.
Oh, I love that one.
I like that one the most because of how it affected Mike.
All right. So Josh, where how can we find you?
I'm around Howard. I'm somewhere. Yeah. You can find me.
You're on there.
Yep.
What are we working on?
What are we working on?
I have no idea.
Nothing.
Should we work on something? Do you guys think we should work on something?
Yeah.
Hashtag work on something.
We've been tweeting Star Trek gifts at each other.
Yeah. I'm Riker. You're Picard. Naturally. Yeah.
Really? I just think we should be working on our YouTube series of.
That's true. Actually.
Me. I like it. I'm in favor yes. of this.
Absolutely. I'll subscribe. I'll smash that subscribe button. I mean, Emily, I feel like the Riker beard goes so well with your mustache. It's a natural pairing.
Doesn't it? I know.
Imagine Riker with a Sasto mustache.
I'm sure that like he probably had one at some point on like the holodeck.
I wonder if I had a mustache. That's the most creative episode of Next Generations.
Yes.
Also haven't watched that.
All right. We digress. Moving on.
Haley, before you tuck into more Star Trek after watching this, how can people follow you on social media and what have you been working on?
My big month of February where I felt like I podcasted every single day is over. Transitioning into my off season. There's only 1 week left of The Bachelor.
But 5 hours heard, of it.
Oh, yeah. Like, I swear to God, they're trying to kill me. Like, I just feel like it.
Stay strong, Haley.
I see what you did there.
Oh, wait. Sorry.
I don't think you saw what
he did. I didn't know what
he did.
I
not
doing.
Realize he was doing what he did. That makes it even better.
I'm so dumb. I'm really
You're
dumb.
Not dumb. It's
dumb
okay.
Guy.
It's
dumb okay. Guy.
Anyway, so it's supposed to be super dramatic next week. You can find coverage probably where you're getting this Top Chef podcast. So just keep your eyes out for that. Other than that, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at @hstrong_. I posted a really nice picture of tacos today on my Instagram feed. So go check that out. Double tap it.
Right now.
Yeah.
Give me a second.
Yeah. Follow me if you want. I Instagram story a lot. So that's fun and exciting.
I love your Instagram stories. I think they're fantastic.
Thank you, especially because they're mostly cat-based, and I know that...
Or wine-based. Yeah. Like two of my favorite things.
Yeah, my life is encompassed in my cat.
Whoa, these look really good.
Yeah, those do look really good. Yeah.
Double tap.
Great tacos.
El Pastor, baby.
Oh,
the best.
Oh, that's good stuff. Yeah.
And you can always follow me on Twitter @AMikeBloomType. You can check out the exit interviews I'm doing on Parade for Top Chef. I just posted my exit interview with Carrie a couple days ago. I thought she was a lot of fun. I'll have my interview with Joe Sasto up, and I'll also be doing... Before the finale, I'll be talking with both Joe Flam and Adrian before the finale to get their thoughts overall on the season. So I usually do interviews after the episode. This time I'll be doing them in anticipation for the finale. So be sure to check all that out. In addition to, I covered all the CBS reality shows that occupied the past 2 months. Talking Amazing Race, Big Brother, just interviewed some Survivor stuff as well. Covering Drag Race, SNL, and all that jazz. But thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back next week to talk about the finale of Top Chef 15. And I will say that we are bringing back a guest. We are bringing back someone who has experienced her fair share of finales, considering she has been to two and has had different outcomes. Brooke Williamson will be returning to the roundtable.
I love Brooke. I follow her on Instagram, too. And she's like my favorite person.
Yeah, she's an angel.
Yeah, she's the best.
So she'll break it down. We'll also be sure to ask her thoughts on both. We saw her in the Food and Wine Classic this episode. She got to judge a quick fire. So I'm sure we'll get her thoughts about that as well as wrapping up the entire season. 14 weeks have come and gone. We're finally here.
Great job, guys. Congratulations on all the coverage.
What's a hashtag that we can use to sum up this hour and a half of silliness that we just, gave to the listeners?
Swiss Charmed.
Swiss Charmed. We have Swiss Charmed. We have Memento. We have Makeup Maven.
We digress.
I feel like We Digress might be just a general summation about the course of this podcast. So let's get that Swiss Charmed brand out there as well. Let's see if Bravo can pick it up in the Top Chef off season. We're not picky about our time slots. But thank you all so much for listening. Josh, Emily, thank you so much for coming on. Haley, great work as always. We'll be back next week with the great Brooke Williamson to wrap up this season of Top Chef. But for now, you may pack your knives and go.